Bristol, For the Record, a new local oral history podcast from BCFM Radio in partnership with MShed Bristol and funded by the National Lottery Heritage Fund.
Where to start with Patrick Hart? A broadcaster, a community organiser, a TV host, an entrepreneur, an artist, a record label owner, a football manager. Patrick Hart is currently the CEO of BCFM Radio and has transformed the community radio station since joining in 2011, so one of the most dynamic of its kind in the country. At the same time, he has recently become the executive editor at BBC Radio West Midlands, but continues to live and make waves in Bristol. Hi, Pat.
Hello, mate. I feel like I'm somebody important with that introduction. Thank you.
Patrick Hart, let's start. Why is local media so important?
Gosh, where do I start? Local media is so important because it's about localities, it's about communities. And for many years, people like me, members of the public, have relied on news, I guess, from corporations predominantly. You could call the BBC a corporation, but also business corporations like commercial radio stations and newspapers. And of course, if you rely on your news from an organization whose main task it is to make money, let's start on the commercial ones, then can you really trust them and do they really reflect you? And then the BBC's had a problem historically because it's been predominantly middle class. So we'll take race away from that, but anyone who's from a diverse group, whether that's to do with gender, sexuality, as I say, class or race. It's meant that in the past, the BBC found it difficult to reflect local communities. So in other words, everything that we believed growing up in school in our local communities was often what was taught to us by the media. And our parents believe that too. So the importance of community media and local media is right there. If we're not telling people's stories and we're not reflecting accurately the experiences of local people in their rich diversity, then we've got a real problem when it comes to our communities and our society.
So can you just go into a bit more, what is the difference between community radio compared to commercial radio or the BBC? So you've touched upon it there. I guess what's more the difference between commercial radio and community radio?
Well, commercial radio is simply that. It's commercial. So it's there. You know, they'll say it's there to entertain, and I guess to an extent it is. But it's basically there to hit as many people as possible in terms of listeners in order to sell advertising. Ultimately, they have to make money from advertising. So in essence, that means that certain subjects that aren't particularly popular, let's support young asylum seekers. Well, that's not popular, is it? So we don't talk about it. So we don't challenge. So it's purely there to encourage individuals to have their radio sets on or their smart speakers on for as long as possible so that it can then say to an advertiser, look, you know, Mr. and Mrs. X listen for 9 hours a day, pay us £10,000. So that's the commercial radio model. Agree or disagree, I'm not making a judgment, but that's what it is. Community radio and BBC, I guess. BBC is community radio. It's just paid for by the licence fee. The difference with BBC and community radio is BBC must be impartial, and I understand why. Community radio can be opinionated. It can be the advocate for local people and local groups. It should still have balance, but that's not the same as being impartial. So I guess that's the main difference. And of course, community radio, generally speaking, volunteers. Broadcasters don't get paid. Managers might, quite rightly, because it's a lot of people to organise. But for example, BCFM, over 200 volunteers. That's a massive task, right? To make sure that people's well-being is looked after, their safety and their training and their well-being. So community radio, traditionally across this country, people aren't paid to broadcast.
So you mentioned the BBC generates income from the licence fee,
yep,
and commercial radio from advertising. How does community radio generate income?
With great difficulty would be my first question. Most community radio stations start on the 1st of April, if that's the beginning of their financial year, with zero. So they have zero guaranteed income. Some community stations may well get a grant from their local authority every year because they're providing a service, you know, things like health and social care, providing announcements. But community radio predominantly will get money from service level agreements, some advertising, though the current regulations say that only 50% maximum of a community radio station's income can be from commercial on-air advertising or sponsorship. So it's really difficult because community radio has always been seen as, if you like, the poor relations to other radio. And unfortunately, because of that lack of resource and lack of imagination, in terms of a listen, lots of community stations have never sounded that professional or slick as a commercial. So they lose out in lots of ways. It's only recently people like BCFM have helped to lead the way in kind of changing that perception and engaging with potential advertisers like the National Health Service and local governments and agencies to actually get really strong community messaging across. And the COVID pandemic has really reinforced that as well.
So you've been involved in radio in Bristol for decades now. How do you see the current health of radio in Bristol and then beyond as well?
People say, you know, many people said for years, you know, radio's dying, FM's going to die. They said it would die 15 years ago, 20 years ago. And even though there's been a steady decline in radio, if you like, analog radio listenership over a number of years, it's still far too popular to ignore. And then there are podcasts. So many radio shows have now turned into podcasts or that it could be standalone. So the way we listen to radio has changed. But the essential part of, do you know what? I like that person or those people. I like to spend time with them in the gym, in my headphones. It's changed because like EastEnders and everything else, we can get it on demand or we can listen to it live. But radio's kind of, I think it's going to be here for a long, long time because there's an element of a breakfast show, a mid-morning show, a drive time show that helps people recognize, you know, where are we in the day? So even though audiences to live radio have declined, they've not declined to the extent that nobody's listening to them anymore. So they're still quite important.
How and why did you get into local radio? Can you describe your journey?
Oh, gosh. As a kid, I was fascinated with music and radio. When my brothers were into sport, I was into, you know, I was that kid that was like messing about with reel-to-reel tapes going, hi, it's 20 past four, and thinking that I was one of those like radio DJs. So that was my initial interest. I didn't know why, I just wanted to be an entertainer, and I ended up being in music and in the music business as well as in radio. So that's how my desire began. But if I look at the aspiration then to where I am now, it's vastly different. And the reason it's different is because I feel that I've managed to combine skills that aren't traditional radio skills. And those are about being a community activist, someone who was massively interested in people. So wanting to develop communities and make change and improve people's life chances. And if you couple that with being a broadcaster, I guess I'm right at home being in community radio because that's what it's about, I think.
And it's not just BCFM, is it? There's been a few other radio stations over the years in Bristol that you've been part of. Could you just quickly describe that for us?
Sure. Well, I'm not allowed to say, you know, I'm not allowed to say that I was part of pirate radio back in the day. But look, any chance we got to broadcast, whether that was like, you know, six blocks down to a local police station in St. George with a, you know, with a microphone stand as an aerial on top of a residential property to some of the most loved, I will call them community stroke pirate radio stations. I've been involved in many of those, also involved in RSLs, which were restricted service licenses. And my organisation with a company called UKRD helped set up what was once Cute FM, changed to Star Radio, Eagle Radio, and I think it's now been swallowed up by Hits Radio. And the reason for that is just, you know, that's just about Ofcom regulation and the way that they've allowed big companies to buy small stations. But that was initially a community radio station, you know, based on the models of the old FTP for the people, where marginalised groups could finally have their music played. Local people could finally get themselves on the radio and tell their stories. I mean, there's a clash sometimes between music and speech. Some people just, I don't like speech. But as we know, young people, students, everybody listen to podcasts. You know, speech is so important, being able to hear conversations and experiences. But my journey really, as I say, in different radio stations, ended up at BCFM because I think it was just in my life, it was the right time in my life to say, do you know what? I don't like the commercial model. I'm not into it. I feel I've got a skill set, but it's not selling advertising for someone else's brand. So I ended up here at BCFM.
Nicely moving on to the next one. So what is the origin story of BCFM? How and why did it all kick off?
So at the time, I remember working on a number of stations and I remember starting a number of RSLs, which are restricted service licenses. They're kind of trials that you license with Ofcom. And I remember Joanne Schofield and Phil Gibbons at the time, who I knew because they'd Joanne had worked on Shades of Soul and QFM with me prior. And she called me one day and said, we're applying for a license, Pat. Is your station going to apply for the license? I said, where's it for? She said, it's Barton Hill and that kind of area. I said, not really, to be fair. No. I looked at the license and it looked too small. So I said, no, you guys go for it. And they did. And that's the last I heard. I was running business at the time, quite a big childcare organisation, and it was doing okay. And then there was a major change in my life. I lost my mum, and everything. The only way I can describe it, looking back on it now, and it still seems quite real, is that when you get out of bed in the morning, you sit on your bed and you put your foot down on the floor, and it's like the floor wasn't there anymore. It had gone, and it caused me a real issue in terms of my own mental health. So I stopped doing what I was doing, which was a massively successful business looking after young people, you know, turning over a hell of a lot of money, and said, I can't work anymore. And I didn't for a whole year. And then Joanne got in touch with me and my wife, Sherry, and said, do you want to be on the board of this BCFM? So I had a listen to it and I thought, oh, I don't know. And they said, we really need some help. So I went and sat on the board, Sherry and I, and that was my first step back really into work and engaging with people after spending all the money I'd saved and really not working. On the board for a little while, did what I could to help this kind of this radio station. And one day I arrived at a meeting and everyone's saying, it's closing. And I went, what? They said, it's closing. We've run out of funding to pay the station manager. I mean, it was about 30K or something. And I went, well, hang on a minute. You know, I've been here 3 months and they seem a good bunch, et cetera. So no, it's closing. Cut a long story short, I said, I'll tell you what, I'll run it. I'll run it for 6 months for nothing. And then we can raise some more money. And kind of 15 years later, I was still here. And I kind of realized that BCFM is a station that was initially based around Barton Hill and the inner city and looking at, you know, Somali and South Asian and people from African Caribbean backgrounds, white British working class, all of that. There was a real potential for it to go further beyond the Barton Hill, if you like, and be a real force for good in Bristol. So that's what we did. The theory was, listen, just because it's community radio doesn't mean it's got to be crap. See, you know, community crap doesn't go together. You need to be as good as the BBC. And then we went, no, let's revisit that. You need to be better than the BBC. You need to be slicker than Kiss or Galaxy at the time on your breakfast shows. And let's really make an impact so that our communities trust us and they turn on the radio and they want to listen to us. They don't feel they have to. They feel they want to because what we do and what we say sounds good to them. And whilst we've engaged them, we can real be a real force for good. So that's, sorry, a long version of a short story.
So BCFM started broadcasting on the 26th of March 2007. When did you get involved?
2009 was when I got involved, and it was difficult because the people that had created the station, you know, I didn't realise at the time, right? And I'll explain this. There's a lady called Christina Rubino who was on the board at the time very early. I didn't know her particularly well. So there's this couple, people of colour, that to some doesn't seem particularly important. And I didn't realise at the time. Pat Hart, Sherry Eugene Hart. Sherry was a well-known face from broadcasting in TV. well loved across the city and the region, to be fair, not just from members of the global majority community, but people right across because of her work. I didn't realise that people saw us as some kind of like powerful force. And so at board level at 2009, when they wanted to close the station, we felt so passionately that it was like, no, you can't close the station. So there was this almost like this, it was like a power struggle where the old regime wouldn't let us take over the station. Write down, can you imagine, what's the password to this on the computer? I need to do this. So there was this really horrible 5 or 6 months of trying to, not grab, but pull control, quite rightly, because the board wanted it, of the radio station. It was a really painful and difficult time. It's all fine now, but it was a difficult time. But what it made me realise is that community stuff is worth fighting for. There are people that need others to lead, and sometimes you need to be strong and say, do you know what, we need to do this. And that's how things changed, really, from 2009. They always told us we can't have a breakfast show. And I said, we're going to have a breakfast show. If you've got a radio station, first thing in the morning, people need to switch on their radio and they need to hear something. And if they hear you in the morning, they're more likely to stay with you. And, you know, we managed to work with a community radio station that we were warring with for a long time and create something called the One Love Breakfast, which to me was a proud moment, because it showed the city, warring factions, people that say they don't get on, can actually work together and do something for the greater good, for everybody.
So you became the CEO from 2011?
I think so. So I ended up being station manager. I ended up doing Drive with Mikey Rods and doing lots of other projects. I ended up being involved in a project that brought BCFM, Summer Valley and Glastonbury FM together. So we were trying to create a little bit of traction in terms of advertising and saying, listen, why don't we work together rather than three community stations in the same area or a similar geographic area trying to struggle to do the same things? Why reinvent the wheel? So I spent a year working together with those radio stations trying to kind of create something. And after that period of time, I tried to help reform our charity and say, look, we need better governance. We need a different type of board. We need all this kind of stuff. And people like Christina Rubino and a lady called Ali Grant that was the chair for a long time, they kind of saw beyond that, oh, you've got these people of colour coming in and trying to change things, because people often feel very threatened in communities. But for me, it was really clear. You know, I walked out of the Beacon Centre, which was then part of City Academy, and I looked around and I saw a massive Somali community. You know, I saw a really mixed, and deprived neighbourhood. And those global majority faces were actually a local majority in that area. And so people like Christina and Ali and a few others didn't see that threat. And they worked alongside us to kind of create what we've got now, which is a really diverse station with a diverse group of people leading it.
So BCFM, as it is now, what is its mission? And can you describe some of the shows and programming and the current state and health?
Sure. So BC, Bristol Community FM, that's what it's about. It's about reaching as many communities in Bristol as we can. In terms of our mission, it's to serve the underserved. So where commercial radio or BBC local radio doesn't provide services, examples would be some of our members of our communities who are growing, where English isn't their first language. So we have a Latin window show. In the past, we've had shows that have featured the Somali language. We have Arabic spoken programs as well. So it's the underserved, our elders, those with disabilities, our LGBT plus communities. And we have shows for those communities. But the big thing about those, it's not about being in a little silo and saying, all right, well, if you're from an LGBT background, then this is your show. No one else listens, switch off. If you're Polish, this is just for you. Nobody else listen. Foreign language programs are multilingual simply because we don't want to close the door on anybody. So it's amazing when you hear people from our Somali community said, oh, I listened to the Polish show the other day. That music's sick, you know. Or somebody said, I listened to Somali music. And it means that because you can hear music and you can hear speech and someone's subtitling it for you, whoever you are in the community, you can learn. from each other. So it's not you lot go in the corner there, have a black show here and an Asian show there. It's about bringing all of those elements together. And actually, our One Love Breakfast show did that. You know, you could be anyone in the city and you could tune in and right now you still can and say, do you know what? We're loved. BCFM loves us. Doesn't matter who we are. It stands up for us. And that's been the key mission of BCFM, is bringing communities together, not by preaching, but by showing that actually there are amazing things throughout our city that we don't know about, and let's educate each other, you know. So that's it. And we got 60 or 70 different shows, from genres of music to cater for lifestyles and different communities.
So you've been involved with BCFM since 2009. What are some of your personal highlights and memories that stick out?
Two or three things. One of them, I think, would be the One Love Breakfast, simply because it was a really exciting thing to do. And then looking at some of the presenters of other established breakfast shows around the city, they were going, oh, my gosh. Who are these people? All the politicians are suddenly, all the best guests are going to the One Love Breakfast. There was a real hype, which I can't remember what year it was, but we did a One Love stage at St. Paul's Carnival, an event that the previous mayor, George Ferguson, said, oh, it's full of trouble, you know, you can't have the money and all that. And you know what? There were four arrests that year. And we were looking after Portland Square, one of the big stages there. And everyone from Ujima Radio and BCFM Radio and everyone on stage saying, listen, this is our carnival. Don't mess around. Four arrests. Two of them were drunk and disorderly, one for distribution of drugs and one for someone weeing up against a wall or something, right? That was it. And to me, that epitomized a snapshot of a city one year when two really big community radio stations came together and said, listen, put down any grudges. Let's work together for the benefit of the city. And I genuinely feel that it pushed across Carnival, and there was a real feeling that our communities were going to look after each other and we were going to look after our communities. So there was that. Managing in 2014 to go to Rio de Janeiro for the World Cup, not watching any football, but reporting on life in Rio de Janeiro during the World Cup, how people were displaced and having a massive impact. And the people of Bristol paying for us to stay there, and a couple of airlines, I think it was Air France and KLM, sponsoring our flights. It was the most exciting thing to be able to broadcast so many thousand miles away. Daily breakfast shows during that period, and also sports shows talking about the actual sport as well. So that was a highlight. But the ultimate thing is really simple, is being in a room during a gathering of BCFM people and seeing, you know, 80, 90, 100 people that would never in a million years talk to each other or communicate or hang around with each other, be together. So you had people from our LGBT plus community, people from our African Caribbean community who love their dancehall and their reggae, people from our Muslim communities, our elder communities. You know, just you could describe every member, you know, a wheelchair user, just so many people in a room together and saying, do you know what? The one thing we got in common is BCFM, and that forces us to learn about each other and to understand each other. So to me, you know, I've said three things, but probably the last thing, imagine that's a little micro of what our community should be about.
In the summer of 2019, there was a fire in one of the studios. Can you describe what happened that day and then what happened afterwards? And also, what was the response from the community?
Wow. So, do you know, I can't even remember what day of the week it was. It might have been a Thursday or a Friday. I just remember getting a phone call from Tony, who was the presenter at the time, saying that there was smoke and something was coming out of the mixing desk. And the first thing, you know, I said to him was, well, look, just press repeat, leave a load of songs on, raise the alarm and leave the building. 40 minutes later, I arrived down to Eastern Community Centre. I saw smoke bellowing out the windows. I can't even describe, you know, those gut-wrenching, the belly, it was horrible. I remember a number of our volunteers were here. The first thing I did is went to our people to see how they were. The fire brigade were there. There were barriers, which meant that we couldn't get in. It was horrible. It was horrible. Just to see your building, and I know it sounds silly, but like there were these awards and all this stuff that was on the wall. It was just like all this stuff just in flames, right? There's a massive amount of smoke coming from the building. So that's what happened. How we managed, everybody, the TV, the radio, national press, all these people saying, you know, community station, you know, down and up in flames and all that kind of stuff. It was unbelievable, the response we had. Thanks to our engineers and quick thinking, we managed to get back on air, even with playlists and announcements, probably, I think, within 24 hours or less. And we had insurance, but we knew that because of the way our studios were built, with, if you like, the blood, sweat and tears from volunteers with equipment begged and borrowed from so many different places and organisations, it was a unique setup. So we knew we needed more. And after conversation with some of the team, they said, well, let's do a fundraiser, you know, a crowdfunder. So we thought, look, if we can get about $1,000 just to pay for the stuff the insurance won't, because insurance never pays for everything, we'll be fine. The response was absolutely incredible. 13, 14, 15,000, I can't even remember. And it wasn't even about the amount of money coming in. It was the messages that really brought home to our presenters and our team what BCFM meant to them. People from here, there and everywhere, people from abroad donating, local TV, national radio, getting involved and talking to us about what a community radio station like BCFM meant to them. That impact was incredible. And a couple of years on, when I look back, I understand why now. You know, for example, I think we were the first community radio station to have a daily news team on a daily breakfast show, our own news team. We didn't take BBC News or IRN News. We trained our own news team to report on local stuff. And we became quite militant and, you know, and we were first talking about the Colston statue. Whatever your view is on it, we were the first to campaign against the local newspaper because we felt they were too right-wing. You know, we felt that their stories sometimes would marginalise our LGBT plus communities, talking about the spit shields and all that kind of stuff. So the whole Edward Colston thing, you know, 10, 12, 13 years ago, we were talking about that first. And it's really important. And I'll say this because I genuinely believe this to be true. The One Love Breakfast and BCFM created the space for people like Bristol Cable and Bristol 24/7 and other media to go and occupy. Because we were the first to challenge that status quo of, oh, the Bristol Evening Post. Well, if it's in there, that's it. BBC Points West, BBC Radio Bristol. Well, they no longer were able to control local news and narrative because we were able to own our own. And a graduate of BCFM Radio, Neil Maggs, always used to say, listen, it's about not telling people's story for us. It's about letting us, letting local communities, empowering them to tell their own stories in their own authentic way. And everyone's learned from that. BBC have learned from it in local radio and TV. Commercial have learned. And Bristol Live or Bristol Post has suffered from it because there's now community newspapers, more community media. There's more community radio stations now. We've got Swoo FM, you know, we've got Nudes Radio and we've got so many others, I think 1020 and others that have sprung up. And as the CEO of BCFM, I welcome those because I think that's what we need. You know, the more the merrier in the sector.
You mentioned Neil Maggs. That's one person who's gone through BCFM. BCFM has kickstarted many careers in the media industry. From the top of your head, can you just go through some other examples?
Absolutely. I mean, Abdi Baham, for example, works for BBC World Service. I mean, he was he looked after our Somali show for a long time. Mohamed Makawi, who still broadcasts on BCFM, you know, also broadcasted to millions with his Voice of Sudan show because National Network in Sudan took Makawi's programs. He's now a counsellor but still broadcasts for us. So many. Susie Purdy was a One Love Breakfast producer, you know, ended up producing Joe Wiley and others on BBC Radio. A guy called Kenzie Hanafan ended up producing all types of programmes from Top Gear to, all right, Jeremy Kyle, and all sorts of other stuff. Harriet Robinson works at the BBC. And then, of course, me coming through there as well, running the second largest station for the BBC in the country at Radio WM. And you, Marcus, winning awards, you know, award-winning podcaster, right, and broadcaster. And Neil Maggs making stuff for BBC Radio 4. The list goes on and on. I'm sorry if I've forgotten people, but the beauty about local radio and community radio, if it's run properly, And if you really want your volunteers to grow and to fly, is that it's a great grounding to understand what journalism really is about. And then you can go elsewhere. And we're lucky, because we have a high standard, that the BBC and commercial do actually value BCFM. And that's a great reason for people to start.
Because at one time, sections of BCFM programming was on BBC Radio Bristol, wasn't it?
Absolutely, and beyond Somerset Regional and then national as well. So we had a scenario called the Best of BCFM where we'd clip up 6-7 minutes of content from BCFM radio. And this is stuff, you know, people talk about hyperlocal, but this is stuff that the BBC couldn't get because it didn't have access. When there was stuff going on, and it wasn't just about community unrest. I remember there were stories about, you know, a Somali girl from one of the local schools had gone over to Syria, had gone, and they could not get those stories from local families and local people. They had to get it from community radio stations. But my thing was, don't just use us as community radio stations. You know, if you're going to take our content, invest in us, partner with us. So we've partnered for years, 4-hour programs for St. Paul's Carnival, BCFM, Ujima, BBC Radio Bristol, Bristol Pride, same kind of stuff. Journalists like Mike Jenkins, who started on the Afrotopical show with Cyrus the Virus, have ended up being award-winning TV and documentary makers, making documentaries for both Channel 4, ITV and the BBC. And, you know, they're not just about community activism stories. They're about all sorts of stuff. So it's an amazing place to hone your talents, definitely.
BCFM has won many awards and accolades over the years. What one means the most to you and why?
Oh, we have won loads of awards. I mean, I always used to go, you know, the Sony Gold Awards, like the FA Cup and all that of radio. But do you know what? The award that I feel most proud of was an award that came through an organisation called Oscar in the City, and it was voted by people, and it was improving people's lives. And to me, that epitomises everything. You know, I'm not a glory hunter in any shape or form, but I do understand that when you're recognised for your work, it helps you and it helps your colleagues, it helps your volunteers, it validates them. And when people are volunteers, you need validation more than anything. If you get paid to do your job, you can come into work, you get paid, so sometimes you don't even need to care, right? But when you're a volunteer, you do need that recognition and validation. And so the Improving People's Lives Award, which we had for a number of years, to me, is probably the most important. But there are other awards that, you know, it was great to have as well.
Yeah, you've also won national awards at the Community Radio Awards as well.
Absolutely, yeah. See, I forget. And I say that not in a way, because to us, awards are important, as I say, so that you validate yourself. But Marcus, you know, for us, we've won in the podcast category for the 12 Communities One Bristol project as well.
And Innovation of the Year.
Absolutely. So, as I say, it just validates everybody. It validates the work that you do and our 200-strong volunteer team. And most importantly, every time we have a new volunteer day, guess what? They're nearly always fully subscribed. People want to get into radio and they want to come. They don't want to go anywhere else. They want to come to BCFM. And that always warms my heart.
You mentioned her name earlier. Who is Christina Rubino and why are one of the BCFM studios named after her?
Do you know what? As I look to my right and there's a picture of Christina Rubino, and it is just so difficult to describe this woman. A free spirit, someone that has been around for longer than me, around BCFM before I ever was. She was always kind of on the edge and then in and then out again. Somebody if you met, imagine if anyone's watched Absolutely Fabulous, right? Those women on Absolutely Fabulous, those older women that are full of fun, extremely well-spoken. But if you got on the wrong side of them, God help you, right? Christina was one of those people, and she championed BCFM for so, so many years. I think if it wasn't for her, I probably still wouldn't be here. There were times I wanted to walk out, times where she would just have to stand up and say, literally swear at people, using some great expletives, right? But the way she said them were amazing. She was passionate. And she was involved in things like Venue Magazine and all kinds of different things of bringing people together. we lost her a couple of years back, really quickly, to cancer. She started having back pain. She was in her hospital bed asking for a laptop to be brought in so she could sort out the accounts. That was the type of person she was. And, you know, she had an impact on so many of us. And yes, I know we've lost lots of people. There's a chap called Tim Lloyd Yates, whose anniversary came up recently, who we lost also, who was a major influence on BCFM. But Christina, simply because of all of those years of dedication and commitment, her loss was just so, it was a shock to all of us. And we felt the best way to honour her. And she was also a massive champion of International Women's Day, but not in a way you would think. It wasn't, oh, Marcus, Pat, get out. It was, come on, you guys, let's all celebrate International Women's Day. She had a skill of bringing people together. So that's why this main studio, Studio One, is called the Christina Rubino Studio, because it means that we will never forget her. And it's the place that she probably felt most comfortable talking, even when you didn't want her to talk on the radio and she'd just come in for a cup of tea. She'd talk on the radio. So this is the perfect place to honour her.
To finish, Pat, how do you see the future of BCFM and community radio in general?
I see the future of BCFM and community radio that, you know, it will run in tandem. I think it's going to be even more important. Come 2026, there's going to be a new charter for the BBC. Cross fingers, because I'm working there, is going to be agreed. But I think a lot of that, they're going to have to use the influence and the expertise across community radio. So I think there's a bright future in terms of a training ground and a provider. But I think even more so, we're going to have to work together. You know, in honesty, I would see us and Ujima Radio and maybe another community radio station being in a building together, saying to Ofcom, listen, you've made a mistake with your local TV licenses. You've done what you did with radio, which is why Hits FM is what should have been a community radio station. You need to license TV like you've licensed community radio. And then imagine that, you know, a Bristol community TV channel run by local journalists, local people. You'd have local TV channels right across the country. So I see our future in podcasting, in live broadcast, in community television as well. So I think it's bright because simply, and you've proved this, Marcus, from your generation, more and more people want to tell their story. More and more people want to listen to their story from different generations. And community media, if you like, radio, TV and podcasting, is the best way to do it.
Patrick Hart, thank you very much.
Thank you.